Throughout all of time, God has used women in incredible ways. It was Jochebed, Moses' mom, who rescued the guy who would one day rescue the entire nation of Israel when she put him into a little basket of reeds and floated him out into the Nile River. It wasn't the only time in Moses' life that a woman saved him. Once he had his first son, he refused to get him circumcised, and it was his wife, Zipporah, who saved him from the Lord's wrath when he was going to kill Moses over his disobedience. Later in the Old Testament, you find that Esther rescues the entire nation of Israel by going to a wicked king, and she had been so kind, so generous, had acted with such dignity over a long period of time that the king rescued the entire nation of Israel because of her simple request to do so. The stories go on and on throughout all of the scriptures. You find Ruth, you find Mary, where God uses women in incredible ways. It's women who first run to the tomb. It's women who first declare that the Savior has been resurrected from the dead. It's women who first believe, and men who struggle to do so. And in recent times, God has given us another one who has become our image of Proverbs 31 over the last few years, Joanna Gaines. And there is a potential this morning that we have some view of women, whether it's Queen Esther or maybe a Joanna Gaines, that we all lift up and say, this is the picture of what a godly woman looks like. And in reality, when you get to Proverbs 31, a chapter devoted to what a godly woman looks like, what is listed here is the mundane. It is the daily. It is the routine. And God lifts up these things as a measure, an indication of what a godly woman looks like. And so this morning we're going to be in Proverbs chapter 31 and go through that chapter. And I want to show you what it looks like to be a godly woman. It is intended to inspire you that it is attainable. It is intended, ladies, to encourage you in what you're doing, that they are marks and measures of godliness already in your life. And then husbands and dads in the room, there is some application for us as to what we are supposed to be doing in the presence of these godly moms. We're going to start reading in verse 10 here in Proverbs chapter 31, but you would note in Proverbs 31 verse 1 that this text, this oracle, this poem that we're going to go through was given to King Lemuel by his mom. And he understands what's happening here, both through probably the lens of what his wife is, but also who his mom was in his life. And like the king, I was thinking this week just about my own wife and how she's taught me Proverbs 31. I've been married for 23 years. I've watched her be the mom of our kids for 17 years. And I understand this text, not just because I studied the last couple of weeks in order to prepare to teach, but more so because I've watched her live it. And godly moms and godly wives are this way. They teach the church how to understand the scriptures, and I'll come back to that point in just a second. You'll see it right in the text. All right, let's start reading. In verse 10, we're going to read down through the end of the chapter. An excellent wife, who can find? She is far more precious than jewels. The heart of her husband trusts in her, and he will have no lack of gain. She does him good and not harm all the days of her life. She seeks wool and flax and works with willing hands. She is like the ships of the merchant. She brings her food from afar. She rises while it is yet night and provides food for her household and portions for her maidens. She considers a field and buys it. With the fruit of her hands, she plants a vineyard. She dresses herself with strength and makes her arms strong. She perceives that her merchandise is profitable. Her lamp does not go out at night. She puts her hands to the distaff and her hands hold the spindle. She opens her hands to the poor and reaches out her hands to the needy. She is not afraid of snow for her household, for all her household are clothed in scarlet. She makes bed coverings for herself. Her clothing is fine linen and purple. Her husband is known in the gates and when he sits among the elders of the land. She makes linen garments and sells them. She delivers sashes to the merchant. Strength and dignity are her clothing, and she laughs at the time to come. Isn't that a great phrase? She opens her mouth with wisdom, and the teaching of kindness is on her tongue. She looks well to the ways of her household and does not eat the bread of idleness. Her children rise up and call her blessed. Her husband also, and he praises her. Many women have done excellently, but you surpass them all. Charm is deceitful, and beauty is vain. But a woman who fears the Lord is to be praised. Give her of the fruit of her hands, and let her works praise her in the gates. So this text is poetic. How many of you this morning wrote a note to your mom and you wrote 10 things I love about my mom or 10 things I love about my wife? Any? Man, we got a lot of work to do this afternoon. I literally got a goose egg. I thought for sure, how about an acrostic? Anybody do an acrostic for their mom? Like awesome or mother or mom or nada. Man, y'all got a lot of work to do this afternoon. Well, this poem is like, Proverbs 31 is like an acrostic. There are 22 letters in the Hebrew language, and there are 22 statements about a godly woman here in the text. Each of those statements begins with a separate letter of the Hebrew language. So it's like saying, as we would say, this is a godly woman A to Z. And the text lays out, not as we've been going through the book of Ephesians over the last 5 months, where one argument builds upon the previous argument, and as you understand the whole of the argument, you understand what comes next and what has come before it. These are separated statements, just like you would if you were to sit down this afternoon and write great things about your mom, A to Z, or great things about your wife, A to Z. You would end up with 26 separate statements. The same thing happens here in this proverb. So as you can see from the graph, I wanted you to see kind of what the text looks like. The bulk of the text is around the words and the deeds or the marks of a godly woman. These are the things that a godly woman does that reflect the fact that she does fear the Lord, that she has confidence in God. And on either side of it are a few statements about what it looks like as a husband or as a child to love your wife or to love your mom at the beginning and at the end. And the way I'm going to go through it this morning is rather than go through it from start to finish all the way through, I'm going to group these things together. So I'm going to show you some groups of things in the text that are true about women, godly women, and then come back and give you some application for us guys and children in the room as to how we can love our moms and wives, how we can love them well. So let's get into it. So here's the summary statement. These are the marks, if you will, of a godly woman, or the signs that a woman is a godly woman. And there's going to be six of them that we'll walk through here in just a second. But verse 27 is the summation of all of the truths about a godly woman. And he says in verse 27 that the godly woman, she looks well to the ways of her household, and she does not eat the bread of idleness. There is an intention, and you'll see this as we go through the text, in each of the statements there is implied in it a purpose and intentionality of a godly woman, that she is thoughtful about who she is, about what she is to accomplish, and she is carefully executing on that over time. And she is thoughtful about it. And so the writer here in Proverbs uses this poetic phrase that she does not eat the bread of idleness. The keto diet has been really popular over the last several years. You're familiar with the keto diet? That means you can sit down and you can eat a steak and you can eat vegetables, but you can't eat bread. And the reason why you can't eat bread is because that it's empty of any nutritional value. So the diet wants you to eat protein, but not eat empty calories. And idleness is to time what bread is to the stomach. It can fill it up, but it provides nothing of lasting effect. And a godly woman thinks about her time, and she thinks, I'm not going to fill up my time with things that do not have lasting value, that do not have lasting effect. She has a perspective that says, my time is limited and it is valuable, and therefore I need to invest it to fill it up with things that are of lasting effect. I cannot eat the bread of idleness because it will be empty, and though it fills it up, it will have no lasting value. And so out of that, he gives six marks of how to invest the time well, not in idleness, but to invest it in things that will have a lasting effect. The first one is the first mark that you find in the text, is that a godly woman willingly works hard. She willingly works hard. Look at these verses. Verse 13 says that she seeks wool and flax and works with willing hands. Willing hands. It's not begrudging for her to do the work. She's not begrudging the fact that she has tasks to do. It does not make her bitter. It doesn't make her angry. It doesn't frustrate her. But she finds joy in the tasks. She finds joy in being a mom. She finds joy in being a wife. It's joyous to her. It fills her up. She's not trying to get out of it. She isn't afraid of the difficulty of it, or she's not afraid of the monotony of it, but she embraces it. She changes dirty diapers with a song for her sweet baby. Amen? It's a joy to her. She does it with willing hands. Verse 15, she rises while it's still night. Now, there's two phrases here that talk about after everybody goes to sleep and before everybody wakes up. And he's not talking here primarily about the alarm clock. He's saying that a godly woman, she wakes up with a posture ready to serve. That while everybody else is sleeping, a godly woman starts to think, how can I serve someone? How can I care for someone? How can I help someone? A godly woman wakes up while it is still night because her mindset is there to serve and to give and to care. A godly woman isn't afraid to get up early and to do so, but it's not just about the time she wakes up, it's the attitude she wakes up with. And a godly woman wakes up with an attitude to give and to serve. In verse 17, she dresses herself with strength and makes her arms strong. This doesn't mean she goes to the gym. It means that she is disciplined. A mark of strength is an ability to be disciplined and consistent. And a godly woman is that way. Her arms are strong with the discipline of a life lived well, not spent in idleness, but spent serving and giving and loving. In verse 18, it says that her lamp does not go out at night. Again, this isn't about her bedtime, but the idea is that when the kids go to sleep, she's still thinking about how to care for them. And there's a number of different ways that can happen: preparing for the next day, praying for them, being thoughtful about the word and what biblical truth needs to be applied in their life. But the idea is that a godly woman, she wakes up willing to serve and goes to bed at night willing to serve. She is thinking about how to care and love her family that God has given her, her husband and her kids. And then the last one there in verse 19, it says that she puts her hands to the distaff and her hands hold the spindle. These two instruments were designed to take fibers and turn them into yarn. And then from yarn, she could turn them into garments or blankets or bed coverings or other things. The concept here is that the monotony, the tedious, she's willing to do. So the tedious tasks of being a mom, of which there are many. I walk by the dryer sometimes in the laundry room and I think, how do 6 kids' socks come out of there and end up in different drawers inside of my house? There's nothing glorious about that job. There's nothing glamorous about that job. Nobody like throws a party and cheers for that. And moms, that's what it's like, right? It's the tedious stuff. And let me encourage you this morning, moms, in the tedious, man, God finds great glory for you in the midst of that. When you serve your children that way, when you do the tedious things for your husband or for your kids, that's honoring to him. And God says this is a mark of a godly woman. She does the tedious things and she does them willingly with a good heart attitude, excited to serve and to love her family. Here's another mark. She willingly works hard. She also provides the basic needs for her family. Verse 15, she provides food for her household and portions for her maidens. In verse 21, she's not afraid of the snow for her household. Why is she not afraid of the snow? Because all of her household are clothed in scarlet. And then in verse 22, she makes the bed coverings for herself, and her clothing is fine linen and purple. So she looks good, but she's also concerned about the food, the clothing, and the shelter of her family. And she's thoughtful about it. She's intentional about it. She's made sure they have coverings for their bed. She makes sure they have clothes. She's made sure that they have foods. They have food on the table. And when I think about this, I think about the practical ways this happens inside of our house. And kids, listen to me a second. When your mom tells you to put your jacket on, to put on sunblock, to go take a bath or a shower. Teenagers, when your mom tells you, boys, tells you to go take a shower. Anybody tracking with me? Any mom in the room told a son to go take a shower? Okay, that's what we're talking about right here. We're talking about the basic provisions of life. Hey, go take a shower. You stink. Kids, listen to me. Teenagers, listen to me. When your mom says that, do not say to her, why? The answer to that question is she is being all that God intended her to be. The reason why she tells you to take a shower, to put on sunblock, to eat your food, to clean up your room, the reason why she's doing that is because that's what God made her to be. And you should look at her and say, thank you, Mom. You are being all that God has created you to be for me in my life. That's the right response. That's the right heart response. All right, husbands, let's get a little deeper on this. When our wives tell us we need to go to the doctor and get a physical, and when he says to us, and when she says to us, hey, you need to watch your diet, or you need to change a couple of habits, she is being the woman that God created her to be, to care for us and to provide for us. And in the same way, we should look at her and say, thank you for being all that God created you to be in my life. Now be careful, ladies. Proverbs 27:15 says that a nagging wife and a leaky roof are one in the same, so don't be naggy about it. But, no, don't be amening that. Let's amen the other part. But when she tells us, hey, take care of yourself, hey, that's she's being all that God has designed her to be. That's a godly woman. Cares for us, loves us, provides for us. All right, next one. Next one is that she manages money well. She manages money well. Look at these verses. These are awesome. Verse 14, she's like the ships of the merchant. She brings her food from afar. Ships of the merchant, they go out and they find goods that cost less. This is a woman who cares about saving. She's managing her checkbook well. She's thinking about it. She's finding savings somewhere. Verse 16, it says that she considers a field and buys it. And the fruit of her hand, she plants a vineyard. This doesn't mean that she's in real estate, although she might be. This means that she finds things of value, and she acquires them because they're good value and they produce something else. So the field, she buys the field, she considers it, she buys it, she turns it into a vineyard. The idea is that she isn't just cheap. She doesn't just take her money and buy the cheapest things she can find. She takes her money and she invests in things of value. Verse 18 says that she perceives that her merchandise is profitable. This means that she thinks about what she's buying in a way and she determines whether or not it's useful or profitable. This is the idea in modern context. 2019, you might say, she checks the reviews on Amazon before she buys. She spends the time to be diligent and to be thoughtful and to ensure that the way the money is spent will have the effect for which it is intended. The merchandise is profitable. And in verse 24, it says that she makes linen garments and sells them, and she delivers sashes to the merchant. God isn't saying, ladies, that you have to learn to sew. That's not the point. This godly woman, she takes raw materials, she puts them together, and by taking raw materials, putting them together, she makes them more useful than they were as individual pieces. That sounds like dinner on Wednesday night. That sounds like walking into a kid's room and there's chaos everywhere. And she takes the raw materials of that and with the child teaches them how to structure life. It's the raw materials of homework at night, of teaching a child how to think, how to do their homework, how to get better at school. This is a godly woman. She is trustworthy with the credit card and with the checkbook. And godly men should affirm that in women. There's nothing here in this text, I think this is the best place to put this, there's nothing here in this text that says women should only work inside the home. There's nothing inside of this text that says women should have a job outside of the home. It's completely silent about it. But it does lift up that godly women, they're good with money, they're thoughtful with money. They manage their checkbook and their credit cards and they manage it well. Let's look at another one. The fourth one is that she loves the poor. She opens her hand to the poor and she reaches out her hands to the needy. I love the context of this. Look at the words. She opens up her hand. Now, this woman is wealthy. She's dressed in scarlet. She's got fine linen. This is a well-to-do woman, and she's got kids, and she's got a lot of work to do. And so you might look at this and say, how in the world could this woman possibly have time to care for the poor? She opens her hand to the poor and reaches out her hands to the needy. She's not just throwing money at the problem, but she's actively, personally engaged in caring for someone who is more needy than she is. I think about this, and I don't know that God intends it to be formulaic. In fact, I don't think he intends it to be formulaic, but I do think it's a picture of how to allocate your time. That of the 22 statements, one statement is provided about a godly woman who is giving to the poor outside of her immediate family. The other 21 statements relate to her immediate family. I think that is directionally a guide for us. Ladies, it shouldn't be that all of your time is spent on your immediate family. 5% here is spent outside of the family. And the reverse should also not be true, that you spend all of your time caring for people outside of your immediate family and neglect your own family. The biblical principle here is that a godly woman does both, the emphasis being godly women care for and provide for their own family, but they also love the poor. So those are four actions. Give me two words. I'll give you two words that, two ways that godly women use words. They speak with kindness and wisdom. It says that strength and dignity are her clothing, and she laughs at the time to come. The idea here that's communicated in that she laughs at the time to come is that she faces the future without anxiety or fear. She's not consumed with anxiety. She's not consumed with worry. She's not consumed with nervousness about what will happen next. She has been diligent to prepare for the future. We're going to talk about this more in just a second. Spiritually, she has prepared her children for the future. Physically, she has prepared for the future. So she has done all that she can do in order to get ready for the future, but she is not afraid of the future. She laughs at the future. Her heart is free from anxiety and from fear. She has applied the words of Jesus in Matthew 6:34, therefore do not be anxious about tomorrow, for tomorrow will be anxious for itself. Each day has enough trouble of its own. And she has lived that verse to the point where her heart, when she thinks about the future, she laughs at the time that is to come. In verse 26, it says that she opens her mouth with wisdom and the teaching of kindness is on her tongue. You know what wisdom is? Wisdom is taking biblical truth and applying it to real life. Ladies, you are to be a translator, to take biblical truth and apply it to real life in the lives of your children. I was somewhere a few weeks ago and I was with somebody and this guy only spoke Spanish and I only spoke English and we kept smiling at each other trying to figure out how to say something and neither one of us could figure out which words made the connection. And I pulled out my phone, typed in English what I needed to say to him, and at the end of it wrote Spanish and then hit Google Go and it comes back with this phrase and I showed it to him and he went, ah. Ladies, you are to be a translator of biblical truth from the pages of the scripture into the lives of your children to show them this is what the Bible says and this is what it looks like lived out. A godly woman uses her mouth in a way that takes biblical truth and translates it into a language that children understand. It's not just enough to tell Johnny, don't hit Bobby in the mouth. Ladies, your job is to tell Bobby and explain to Bobby what John 13:34 means when Jesus says that you are to love one another as Christ has loved you. To take that biblical truth and apply it to little Johnny's life when he wants to hit Bobby in the mouth. That's wisdom. That's taking biblical truth and putting it into a context where a 4-year-old or a 6-year-old or a 12-year-old or a 17-year-old can understand biblical truth. Mothers, you've got to be wise, and a godly mom, she takes biblical truth, she translates it into real life. And this phrase right here, the teaching of kindness is on her tongue. Love that. I love the idea that kindness is right there on the end of her tongue. When her mouth opens up, what falls out is kindness. You don't have to dig deep for kindness. You don't have to go searching for kindness. She opens her mouth, it falls out. Godly women teach children and talk with husbands in a way that is kind. Kindness is on her tongue. It's the first thing that falls out. It comes out easily. Next one is that she affirms her husband publicly. She affirms her husband publicly. Look at this. The heart of her husband trusts in her, and he will have no lack of gain. She does him good and not harm all the days of her life, and her husband is known in the gates when he sits among the elders of the land. Think about this. How does the husband known in the gates? Because this woman is industrious. This woman is out and about. She's selling stuff and buying fields and being like a merchant ship. She's out and about. She's not just inside the house with the windows closed and the doors closed, not interacting with anybody. She's out and about. And what she talks about when she's out and about is the goodness and the greatness of her husband. So when her husband shows up, everybody knows who he is because of what she's been saying. She talks highly and well of her husband. A godly woman speaks about her husband in a way that when people figure out who he is, they think highly of him. A husband is not put to shame in the gates. So ladies, let me ask you, how do you speak about your husband? How do you speak about your husband to acquaintances? Do acquaintances of yours, when they hear you talk about your husband, can't wait to meet him, or do they think less of him because you talked about him? What about your close friends? Do they think more highly of your husband because you have talked well about your husband? Or have you talked about him in a way that he is put to shame in the gates? He's less of a man in the gates. A godly woman uses her words in a way that affirm and lift up their husband. And just a word about accountability. I've watched my wife for 23 years talk about accountability groups. And she says all the time that accountability is for talking about your own sins, not that of your spouse. Such a great word. Such a great picture of how we should do accountability with each other. My problem when I go to my accountability group with my guys is not my wife. I'm the problem. And there, my sins are many and I have plenty to talk about. Ladies, be careful with how you speak about your husband. Look at what it says about it in verse 1. It says, if you speak well about your husband is going to trust in you and he will have no lack of gain. You want the heart of your husband, ladies? You want the heart of your husband to trust you deeply? Speak highly of him and lift him up in public. The reward of this is a husband who really trusts you with his heart. It's a beautiful picture of the way it should be. All right, that's godly women. Now let's talk about our responsibility. How are we going to love these godly wives, these godly moms? Three things. First, we're going to think that she is better. Think that she is better. Watch this. Here's verse 10, an excellent wife who can find. She is far more precious than jewels. Her children rise up and call her blessed, her husband also, and he praises her. Look at this quote. Many women have done excellently, but you surpass them all. Many women have done excellently, but you surpass them all. Here's how this looks. We should look around in a place like this at C3, and we should see lots of godly women. And we should say about those women, y'all are godly. Y'all are awesome. You have done excellently. The way you love your husbands, the way you love your kids, the way you train your kids, the way you're raising them up, the way you're serving the poor, the way you're serving in ministries. We should lift up godly women in our midst and say to you all, to the women in the room, you have done excellently. And husband, you should say, but my wife, she surpasses them all. There's a lot of excellent women in our church, but my wife, she surpasses them all. The context here is that, guys, as husbands, we have to develop a heart that says, my wife is better than anyone else. Your wife is a gift. Children, your mom is a gift. According to God's design, his purpose, his sovereign plan, the woman in your life, she is there because of God's purpose. There is no other for you. There is no other mom. There is no other wife for you. God has put her there for the very purpose of being yours. And the mindset that we should have constantly is to think that she is my better. She surpasses them all. And the danger that we have, you get into this last verse 30, charm is deceitful, beauty is vain. As guys, check your heart on this. Instead of thinking that she is better, we start to think that there's someone else better. I remember years ago, very first thing I ever did with my wife in terms of family related, we went to an extended family reunion deal, and we were sitting there, we had a meal, and the meal was over, and her grandfather was sitting in a chair, Papaw as they called him. Papaw's sitting there in a chair, he's finished the meal, and people start saying, "What do you want for dessert?" Papaw had a wise response. There was like pecan pie and apple pie and chocolate cake and cookies. You know what Papaw said? He said, "I want whatever Mamaw made." Oh, that's a wise response. Because what he understood was that whatever his wife made, it surpassed them all. The pecan pie might have been great. The chocolate cake might have been awesome. But whatever my wife made, it surpassed them all. It's a mindset as a husband that says, my wife, she is better. And the danger for us guys is that our heart starts to go a different direction where we start looking on the internet, thinking some woman's hot on the internet. And God wants us to hear, no, your wife is better. Your bride is better. You start having a woman that smiles at you or is kind to you or flirts with you. And the enemy wants to come in and put a magical spell over you and tell you that she's charming and that she's beautiful. And the word is saying to you guys this morning, that is empty. That is a lie. It's a deceit. Do not let your heart be taken. Charm is deceitful and beauty is vain. And the enemy is going to use that to rob us of thinking the one that God gave us, she is better. She surpasses them all. You want to love your wife well? You watch her be godly in all of what we just talked about. And at everything she does, whether it's the tedious stuff or the glamorous stuff, you think and affirm in her life, you're better. You surpass them all. I'm so thankful for you. I'm so glad that God gave you to me. You are an excellent wife. You are a rare jewel. You are better than anything else. You are better. It starts with a mindset, guys, that says, my wife, she is better. Second thing is that we give her the fruit of her hands. Verse 31, give her the fruit of her hands and let her works praise her in the gates. Think about this with me, if you will. Give her the fruit of her hands. Mothering is a long task. Carry the baby for 10 months in the womb. Baby comes out. There's no fruit. The baby cries. It coos a little bit. Occasionally, you'll get a smile after a few months. Thankful. After a few months, you get a smile. Then you get a little walking. Then you get a little terror, right? And they've got a lot of mobility without any understanding. That doesn't feel like so much fruit. And then they start to get a little bit older, and maybe you get a little bit of glimpse of fruit. But fruit is a long process in the mothering process. Anybody agree with that? It's a long process. So if I take a seed and I go plant it in the ground, an orange seed, I go plant it in the ground and I start to water it and fertilize it and it starts to grow and a little tree grows up, then I stake it, then I prune it, then I mulch the ground around it, I continue to fertilize it, I continue to water it. When it gets cold, I make sure it's covered so it doesn't get too cold. And in many years, maybe 10 years, finally my orange tree produces fruit. That is not what this verse is talking about. This verse is saying that we as husbands, we have to put fruit on the tree on a daily basis long before the fruit actually is going to show up. So when your wife is at home all day with a baby, a little four-month-old baby who she can't console, who cries, who doesn't want to eat, and a two-year-old who's running around tearing up everything she just finished doing a few minutes ago, and you walk in the door and she is exhausted and burned out from a long day with kids, you better put fruit on the tree, guys. You better put some fruit on the tree. When your wife is trying to work with a teenager who's got a critical tongue and rebellious and doesn't want to hear it from their mom, you better put some fruit on the tree, guys. When you're an empty nester and the sounds of the house are quiet, and she spends time alone in the house, and there are no kids running around, there are no reminders of how she spent her life well. Empty nester guys, you better put some fruit on the tree for them. Show them that the way they invested their life was worthy of double honor. And God says, guys, godly guys, we put fruit on the tree in the midst of the faithfulness of a godly woman who may not get a lot of recognition for that fruit. Here's some ways to put fruit on the tree. Gary Smalley's book, The Love Languages. You need to figure out your wife's love language. This is how you put fruit on the tree. For some wives, it's gifts. You need to go buy her a gift. You still have time. Stores are open this afternoon. Based on how we started with lack of notes or acrostics, I'm a little concerned about this. But get out there, buy your wife a gift, words of affirmation. Speak words over her, affirming her for what she's done. Physical touch. Acts of service. Maybe it's doing the dishes, sweeping the floors, acts of service. Maybe it's the honey to-do list thing she's got going for you. You might need to get out in the yard this afternoon, get that taken care of. Quality time, time alone with her. That's putting fruit on the tree before the fruit is fully realized from the effects of what she's been doing as a mom. Last thing is that you got to praise her works. Praise her works. Charm is deceitful, beauty is vain. He says it twice, but a woman who fears the Lord is to be praised. Give her the fruit of her hands and let her works praise her in the gates. Now, your wife may not be words of affirmation as her gift, as her primary way of receiving her love language. But the reality is, guys, that we are commanded to speak highly of our wives. It is, in some ways, a guard and a protection against our eyes straying towards somebody else. But it is also a way in this culture of affirming that a godly woman, she is worthy of praise. So we should speak highly of our women, highly of our wives, and highly of our moms, of what they have done and what they are sacrificing to do. That praise should be on our lips, one-on-one and in the gates, in public settings. We should praise her works. Okay, here's what we're going to do. Let me give you two quick other applications. If you're a single woman in the room, I think about this text and I think a couple of things. One, I think without an immediate family, there's an opportunity to cultivate the disciplines that will make you a better wife or a better mother one day if God has that for you. And you devote yourself to caring and to serving other people outside of your immediate family. You flip that sort of care for the poor, care for your roommates, care for your neighbors. Invest yourself into loving and caring for others. Guys, single guys in the room, charm is deceitful and beauty is vain. If that's your criteria for looking for a wife, you're really, really messed up in that way of thinking. You better take this grid right here and say, this is what I'm looking for. I'm looking for a woman who lives and acts like this. You get a godly woman, that woman, she's excellent. And she is a rare find. So if you find her, you should put a ring on it. You should marry that girl. All right.